guys, welcome back to The Landing. This week we have Benny on again to talk about the semi-finals that we have this weekend and also to recap the weekend that we just had. Benny, thanks for coming on again.
As always, Landy, good to be here.
Yep, let's
get into it. Maybe not that good considering the result though.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that. We'll start with the other games first because I feel like last week we kind of carried on about the Dogs and Dons a bit too much. But let's get started with Port and the Cats. The Friday night game didn't go how I predicted. I definitely thought the Cats would be show off a bit stronger, but what an interesting game. I think Port completely just ragdolled them, to be honest. The Cats played one of their worst games of the year, of the last like few years, to be honest. And what did you kind of think about that game?
Well, the first thing that struck me was the adjustments that Port made from the time they previously played each other. Last time they played, Jeremy Cameron ran Aaliyah around and they made the adjustment to free him up, which straight away, I think in the first quarter and the second quarter, you heard the commentators raving about him. And I think that sort of set them up really well for the game ahead. And then the other thing that really stood out to me was there was just a distinct difference in terms of speed between the two sides. I thought Cats looked slow and Port looked dramatically faster.
Yeah, well, I definitely thought Port looked a bit like Richmond of recent years, just a lot of chaos, a lot of pressure in their forward line. And I thought, yeah, Aaliyah was just sensational. Like I remember in the recent year before he moved to Port, the Dogs were having a look at him and I was just like, please, please, please. I think that's just easily got to be one of the best pickups for this season. But yeah, the Cats, unfortunately, when they're really structured play style doesn't really like, when they can't like settle into the game, sometimes they just look really, as you said, really slow. They just couldn't really get anything going. I thought they looked a bit panicked. They had to send Gay Rowan out back and I just didn't think that worked at all. But overall, yeah, the Port just kind of just completely just overwhelmed them. And it was very interesting to see because I hadn't really seen the Cats get rattled like that this season. And they were definitely, like I definitely picked them to win this game.
Yeah, I think the other thing was, like you mentioned there, once it sort of became apparent that the game wasn't on the Cats' terms, they really didn't make an adjustment, or even if they did, it didn't appear to work. I mean, as you said, Gary Rowan went down back. This sort of three-pronged forward line that we spoke about last week, it wasn't working. And although they were actually doing all right clearance numbers-wise, it didn't really feel like around the ground they were doing well at all. So weren't able to capitalize on that. Any entries they were getting were coming straight back out. And like you said, any possessions they were really getting swarmed on by the Port Adelaide forwards and midfielders that weren't really allowing them to have any pressureless possessions.
Yeah. What did you think of Fantasia's game? Obviously coming from the Bombers, I thought that was one of the best nine disposal games I've seen. Just in regards to impact, just everything he touched just turned to gold. That running goal on like the 45 from like 50, just to like drill that, I thought he was awesome to watch. It's a shame. I think he pulled up a bit average at like three-quarter time or something, but apparently he's all good to go for the prelim. But I thought he was awesome to watch.
Well, that's the thing with him. He's a high damage per possession kind of player.
Yeah.
And I think with him, like, he's just so damaging and so crucial to their potential premiership tilt that you just kind of need to nurse him through the home and away season and just hope to hell that you can get like 4-3, you know, depending how many games you play in the final series, hope you can get him through that whilst – once you get there. So they've gotten themselves a week off, which is going to help him because it didn't look great after the game for if they were to be playing the following week. But as you said, he did look great. He's a match winner. He doesn't need much of the ball and he really helps their small pressure forward kind of dynamic that they've got going down there.
Yeah, 100%. Shame his face also just got smashed up as well. He wasn't looking great.
His schnoz doesn't need that kind of treatment either.
Yeah. Not very good to him. What did you think of? I kind of liked it how Robbie Gray kind of, I think with Fantasia and the team, Robbie Gray can kind of take a bit of a back step. Somewhere it's just they're not as reliant on him, because I feel when Fantasia's not in the team, Robbie Gray is that type of X factor forward that kind of just creates the magic. So I thought that was, I hadn't really seen much of those two both in the team, to be honest, and it was good to kind of see Fantasia kind of step up compared to Robbie Gray.
Yeah, well, they've got a bit of a luxury down there in the sense that they've got Gray, Fantasia, and Rosie now.
Yeah.
So they're not the sort of team where it's like, if you played Essendon's first one comes to mind. If you were to play Essendon, like Tipper is the only small forward that you need to worry about of that kind of size.
Yeah.
That might terrorize your defense. But with what Port has, they've got three different forwards that can do it on any given day, kick a bag of five. They're unrelenting in terms of the pressure that they provide once the ball hits the ground down there. So when it comes to like, when it comes to like Charlie Dixon as well, like sometimes all they require of him is to just bring that ball to ground. And when you play a slow team like the Cats, you can just go to work on them with your edge that you have in terms of the amount of speed that you've got compared to them.
Yeah, and I think I was pretty harsh on Charlie Dixon. Like, I really enjoy Charlie Dixon and rate him as a player, but I feel like often, and I'm guilty of this sometimes as well, I kind of expect bags from him. But as you said, sometimes you don't really need that from him. Sometimes you just need to get the ball down to ground just for those Fantasias and Robbie Grays and Rosies to just have at it.
Yep, for sure. And the other person I'd just like to highlight before we move on to another game, I thought that Scott Lysette was really good in the ruck as well.
Thought that last week.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot's been made about Geelong's ruck stocks. And, I mean, you have to take a loss at some position if you're going to have all these stars on your team.
Yeah.
But I thought he had a big impact and really enabled Wines and Boak to go to work. And he kind of, as you, I think you pointed out last week, he really threw his weight around.
Yeah,
had a bit of a Shane Mumford type impact. So I think he kind of set the tone in there for Port Adelaide right from the get-go.
Yeah, I think he just fits in perfect for their culture. And I really enjoy watching him play. I think he's pretty skilled as well. He obviously uses his kind of physical presence a lot, but I do think he can also hold his own in regards to like the in quarters, just like kind of coordinated and like kind of good midfield play.
And what did you
I'll quickly say something. What did you think of Danger? Obviously it came out that he's got some sort of hand issue, I think it is. What did you think of his game on Friday? And obviously there's been a lot in the media about him trying too hard, which I think is pretty ridiculous just based on, I think, although he didn't have a very clean game and he had a couple kind of key drop marks that turned into goals. But I think out of all the Geelong players, I think there's a lot more players you need to worry about before Danger.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's rumours that he's got a hand injury, which potentially would explain the drop marks. I mean, it's unfortunate if that's the case, but it's hard to see Geelong winning the flag if he's not able to give his 100% best. He's still like that type of player that he just flies in at 100%. Like, you know, those real desperation type slides where he yanks the ball out from underneath a pack or something like that. Yeah. I can just sort of picture it when you think he's too far away and he comes in at breakneck speed. But if he's not able to really impose himself on the game, it's tough to see how far potentially Geelong will go in this final series.
Yeah, I agree with you. I hope the hand injury isn't too bad, because I will get into it later, but I do think Geelong fire up again this week. But it's, again, another qualifying final loss. Do you think if they lost this week, do you reckon Chris Scott would be in some trouble?
Ooh, that's tough. I think the question they'd be within their right to ask the question. I mean, talented list for a long time, favorites coming into the year. They didn't finish on top of the ladder or anything like that, but I think the kind of expectation was like
flag or bust.
Yeah, and with what you see with like Richmond and stuff like that, is it's just kind of get the double chance and then go from there. And I think potentially with the loss to Melbourne, we thought they would bounce back. Although he's got the poor qualifying final record, does Chris Scott. But
yeah.
If they went straight sets, I think Geelong potentially could have a look at that for sure.
Yeah. Let's get into the game of the round of the week. Swans Giants. So this was absolutely unbelievable. One of the best games I've watched this season and in the last few years, to be honest. Obviously, it was just filled with drama. We'll start with the Giants' ability to at the start of the game to just dominate in the midfield. Were you expecting that? We kind of said I thought it was definitely going to be a bit more scrappy than it was. It kind of ended up being a bit scrappier later in the game with a lot of misses. But in regards to conditions-wise, I didn't think it was like a slop that we thought it was going to be. What did you think? Were you expecting the Giants to kind of dominate in the midfield like early on?
Yeah, excuse me. I think that the Swans had enough initially. If you look at like the first three midfielders that could go into the midfield, like Parker, Hewitt, you know, he's a capable player. Heaney can go through there. They actually started Papley in there at the first center bounce, which I thought was quite a good idea for a bit of X factor.
I love that as well.
But where I thought they'd get on top, and we discussed this last week, was once you get down to your fifth and sixth and seventh midfielders that have got to go through there, the Giants are still at quality players at that point. And for the Swans, that you're looking at some lesser types, especially because of the couple of injuries that they've got in terms of Mills and Kennedy not playing. So I did expect that, and I thought it was pretty evident in the first half especially. But the Swans found their way to grind back into it, and I think a lot of that was on the back of Luke Parker. He was very, very good.
Yeah, well, I'll just quickly say, I honestly think if Kennedy plays, the Swans win by a couple of goals. I think Kennedy is who they really needed when they got down in that second quarter by like three or four goals. I think that would have just been awesome to have in the midfield, based on especially coming from a Doggies fan who saw him tear us up in the grand final with literally one of the best AFL games I've ever seen anyone play. I think he would have just been great for a lot of those younger players that were having their first finals experience. But also, I just thought they did the classic thing of they came back hard in the second half and they had their opportunities, but it's always so hard to get over that final hump and actually take the lead. I thought Heaney was outrageous. That second half was awesome to watch. He's an absolute excitement machine. So I really
It was kind of a story of two halves in terms of those hybrid type forwards. In the first half, it kind of felt like Toby Green. Everything he touched turned to gold in the first half, and then he sort of faded away a little bit. And then in the second half, it was just all Heaney, and they were in the end. It was kind of the tale of two halves between those two.
Yeah, dead set. And also, how good was like the first like quarter and a half with like we had Toby Green and Buddy both having three in the first half was just outrageous. But we'll have to speak. I reckon I'm already pretty sick of talking about it, but the Toby Green three-quarter time bump on the umpire. What are your quick thoughts on that? And obviously the ruling came out today that it's 3 weeks, but I think the AFL are appealing it. Give me your initial thoughts on the actual act itself, and then how do you think the 3 weeks sits with you?
I'm a bit of a Toby Green truther, so he brings me a lot of grief when he goes and does this stuff, because he's just outrageously fun to watch.
Yeah.
But I think it's everybody knows that it's just the umpire is a complete and utter no-go zone.
Yeah.
it didn't look great from the angles that everybody's seen them. It didn't look great. There wasn't much of a way to get around it. The only thing that I would say that I thought maybe potentially Toby got a bit stiff on was I read what the umpire said in the actual tribunal.
Yeah.
And he sort of said that he didn't feel intimidated. He didn't feel it was aggressive. He didn't feel like Toby was completely at fault. And, you know, maybe it could be argued that he's kind of got to say those things because he doesn't want to throw him under the bus. But they came out and they found him guilty on all three charges. And I thought, you know, even if he still got there, I thought given the fact that the umpire had said that, and additionally, I mean, the AFL doesn't like to say this, but there's kind of like a finals reduction that does occur, whether they like to admit it or not.
At the end of the day, it's a business, so they want the best players playing.
Yeah, like, you know, there's absolutely no way Trent Cotchin should have played in that grand final after he bumped Dylan Shiel in the head, but he did. Yeah. And so I thought, given the fact that he would miss a final minimum, I thought maybe two was maybe appropriate. So maybe he got a little bit of that, what we're starting to see on Twitter is potentially called Toby tax, but, you know, the AFL are coming in. They want to make a statement because really you just can't have kids looking at that as they're growing up wanting to play footy. You can't have them looking at that and thinking that that's okay. So I can understand that side of things too.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, like obviously, based on the umpire's comments yesterday in the tribunal, it's clearly just a major just optics thing. You just can't have that. Like if you don't give him any weeks for something like that, then it kind of sets the precedent that you're somewhat allowed to touch the umpire, which the AFL just can't have. And to be perfectly honest, any sport can't really have that. Because if in any junior sport, you're always just taught, like, as much as parents swear at the umpires and as a player as well, I used to rage at the umpires as well. You're just never meant to touch them. So when I saw the footage, I was just like, Toby, no, please, no.
Did you see his record in finals?
Yeah.
The only game he hasn't received a sanction in was the grand final against Richmond. Every other final he's ever played, he's at least got a fine for something.
And maybe otherwise a week. Maybe he needed to fire up a bit more in that grand final.
Yeah, that was a bit grim.
But yeah, I saw the footage and was just like, look, there's no way that doesn't get a week, at least. And then as time has gone on, it's kind of obviously got given three. And then now the AFL obviously are trying to get it to more, I believe. But just disappointing because, like, it's not like it's like everyone knows it and he knows that he's the most important player for their team. So it's kind of, I understand playing on the edge and I understand getting ultra competitive and just playing as hard as you can and treading that fine line. But doing something like this, it's honestly, if I'm his teammate, I'm quite like disappointed because I reckon Cats were still going to be favorites, even if Toby played, but it turns it from like 60% Cats win into like 85% Cats win, in my opinion. That's just disappointing. Like, and it's also poor leadership, like talking about like whether he wants to become a captain or whatnot. You can't do stuff like that and let your teammates down because like you got to be better than that. So yeah, I was disappointed, and it obviously turns the Friday night game and swings it to be less even. But yeah, it's disappointing to say the least.
Yeah, it would have been really good to see the Cats like under pressure. Obviously, they're going to be under pressure regardless. They're facing straight sets losses. But, you know, if Toby was playing, as you said, everyone sort of would have given the Giants a bit better of a hope to win that game. And it really would have been great to see them test the Cats under the pressure of facing straight sets. So, you know, it's unfortunate we don't get to see that, but there'll still be that pressure for the Cats, but we'll get to that game.
Yeah, just quickly, so Sydney lose Obviously, they kicked, I'm pretty sure it was six behinds in a row to end the game, which is the first time they've done that this year. What do you grade Sydney's season? Is it a success? Is it kind of like where you kind of expected? I think I personally think that they needed a finals win to kind of validate their year. I thought they had an awesome year. I think they'll be pretty, like, all pretty disappointed. But how did you see their season?
So it's one of those things where we see this in so many different sports where once you get into a certain position, you start to look at what your season was like from there. So at the start of the year, I think most people had Sydney as a maybe sort of 11 to 13 type team, maybe pushing into the top part of the teams that were missing the eight though.
Yeah.
You know, they came out and they won like four or five on the trot. There was a portion there where they thought they were even going to make top four potentially. And, you know, I think they just got unlucky with injuries on the back end of the year. They've seen so much development of these kids. I think for me, it's a massive success for them. This team is going to be absolutely terrifying in a couple of years. Like, you know, they still had Logan McDonald and Braden Campbell, two of their very, very high draft picks from last year that weren't even playing. And we saw this year that they're both really good. So I think for them, it was a massive success regardless. I think if you look at where they were three quarters of the way through the year, I think I would have guaranteed that they would have won a final at that point.
Yeah.
But I think it's really easy to be narrow-minded in that sense that and not consider the full picture. Because as we both said, you and I, just before, we both think they win that final if they don't get a bit of poor injury luck at the end of the season there. So
yeah,
it's not all their fault either.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree with you. I think Sydney is somewhat a bit of a more talented Bombers. And I think, like in regards to just a younger team, they're just a bit more talented, no offense. But I think this finals loss, and as I'll say about the Bombers as well, is just generally just good experience for both teams. And just to finally to end this game, how about that Buddy miss? I'm pretty sure 99% of AFL fans thought that that was going through. It was so disappointing. I definitely wanted that to go through, but yeah, it kills.
It was all set up for him, wasn't it? I mean, maybe James Bell will be thankful that Buddy had that shot after him, because he had one from about 20 meters out dead in front that he missed. And that's the one that really should have put them in front. But the fact that Buddy had that shot after him, it was sort of set up, elimination final. He was on the, you know, how he prefers to be on the opposite side to most left footers, where his left is closer to the boundary. It was on the good side for him. I think we all kind of not only hoped, but thought that that was going to go through, but wasn't to be.
Yeah. Correct. All right, so moving on, the Saturday night game, which is D's versus Lions. Off the bat, the D's looked absolutely dominant. Their midfield with Gawn, Oliver and Petrarca just looks ridiculous. And I thought Spargo was also one of the better players that I watched that night. Do you think the D's carry on in regards to just their favoritism now? They're like $2.50 to win the flag. Do you think that's fair, or do you think it's a bit early?
No, I think that's warranted. I think during the season, they proved themselves against the best sides. And I think the way that they handled Brisbane sort of warranted the fact that they should be that price. I think they beat Geelong. So just a couple of weeks to go, and the way that they came home in the second half as well should, you know, have them favourites just based on the fact that if they were to play them in the prelim, let's say, then you could be confident that they could get that win as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely the premiership favourites for mine.
What are your any thoughts on the game? And Brisbane, I think, having Hipwood gone, and I think having Joe Danaher when they lost McStay early, which is a brutal concussion or knockout, like one of the grimmest I've
sickening,
seen.
Sickening, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's awful. But I think having Danaher as the single key forward up front just doesn't really work. I think he works so much better when he's got a tandem with him. And yeah, they just couldn't. Charlie Cameron was sensational, but Danaher just couldn't do enough to keep them in the game. But what were your any comments on the game?
Yeah, well, I think Joe kind of just, he's not really a stay-at-home full forward and he's not really a centre-half forward either. He's just the best way to let Joe dominate, I think, is you just kind of need to, like, let him roam free.
Yeah.
And from a structural point of view, that's obviously not ideal because when you're playing Melbourne and they've got Stephen May and Jake Lever down the line, you really need someone to be there at all costs to at least bring that ball to ground. And I think, you know, it's really hard to say because Mick Stay was on the ground for so little time. But
yeah.
I think that's what they were kind of – that's what his instructions for the night was to be – just continue to be down the line to bring the ball to ground, give us a chance to either keep the ball in our forward line or get a ball up on the wing and not allow these intercept marks. But they – whether they couldn't bring the ball to ground at certain times, they actually struggled as well to lay any kind of forward pressure and keep the ball in their forward line.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah, not only did the D's dominate in the midfield, their back line, aside from the Charlie Cameron matchup, really just looked like they were able to handle the Lions' forward line at most opportunities.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, so I obviously just really impressed with the D's. As a Doggies fan, I'm excited to play this Lions team. I think they do look a bit wounded and just not in the best form. So hopefully we can take care of them this weekend.
they'll be a bit better for it, though, going back to the Gabba, I think. Different side up there. So they'll be looking forward to do that. One thing, though, we should discuss, I think, because obviously the D's game is 2 weeks away, but that Joel Smith matchup, it just didn't really work, did it, on Charlie? He got caught ball watching too often. Charlie would sort of drift out the back and or he'd turn him and get out the back. And I think they just need someone who needs to be a little more man conscious. I know it's not ideal. You get told to play the ball as much as possible, but now with the Lions losing McStay and they've already lost Hipwood, there's not many options down there that are going to tear you apart. So I think you can afford to sacrifice a bloke to just take Charlie out.
Yep, definitely. And let Joe Danaher be the one that beats you, because I think just Charlie Cameron is just so much more damaging. And as I said last week as well, like, there's not many people in the AFL that can guard Charlie Cameron, to be fair.
That's true. I think they got a couple of options. They could go Jaden Hunt for some speed.
Yeah.
He might not be able to go with him aerially, though. And old pig, Michael Hibbard. That's his nickname. He'll be able to do a job. And I think, he's had an All-Australian year. His best footy's behind him, but he might just be a slightly better option for that style of forward.
Yep, agreed. Okay, so let's move on to the finals game that we had last weekend, Dogs versus Dons. Straight off the bat, how nervous were you for this game?
Shambles, mate. Absolute shambles.
Give me something.
I was so thankful that there was plenty of sport on Saturday night that I pretty much didn't have to be concerned with, like, putting my head down on the pillow and just, like, being wide awake. I watched F1 qualifying. I watched Chelsea-Liverpool, a couple other soccer games. Obviously, we had Saturday night footy as well. So that got me through the night. And then, it wasn't much fun from then on Sunday.
To be honest, I didn't really sleep very well. Constantly waking up, checking my phone, what time it is, counting down the hours of the game. And then probably for the 45 minutes leading up to the bounce, I was dead set just pacing around my kitchen and living room, just doing laps, just not really wanting to sit down. But it was good in the end for Doggies fans to find a bit of form. We should be able to give this a pretty good recap. Straight off the bat, you guys came out hot. Well, not hot, but mainly you were dominating the play, but just couldn't really finish some chances that you had. Of course, Stringer kicked the first goal of the game. Hey. But yeah, Darcy Parrish, which is interesting. Obviously, we talked about him last week on whether the Dogs should tag him or not. But that became a huge thing where he absolutely torched in the first half. And we ended up throwing Josh Dunkley on him. And I've got a stat here. He had 23 disposals in the first half and then 12 in the second half. So I thought Dunkley did a great job on him. Because Parrish was just sizzling. It was everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about potentially how the conditions might play into the Dogs' hands, being so deep in the midfield and potentially taking away the advantage that Essendon may have had with their height. But if there was one Essendon player that I thought might gobble up those conditions, it definitely would have been Das.
Yeah.
In terms of what I picked up on as well, I just really enjoyed the Ridley Norton contest. I thought they went back and forth all game. There was moments where it felt like Norton was really trying to break through, potentially to get on top. At the start of the game, I thought Ridley's intercept game was pretty good, although that was negated a bit once it got to the second half. Obviously, Norton broke through, got himself a few in the second half as well. So I'd probably give it a tie in the end, maybe a slight lean Norton. But I definitely don't think Essendon would have been as close as they were.
Yeah, no, I think it's
without Ridley.
A tie is pretty fair because you've also got to take into account that all the Essendon defenders are under attack. So you're bound to, Norton was bound to break through eventually just based on how much pressure we're putting on your defenders. Just quickly, how tall is Ridley?
Oh, that's a good question. I think he's 194.
Yeah, he's way taller than I thought he was. He matches up like pretty closely to Norton, which surprised me. But I also will say Norton, I thought he was absolutely incredible on the weekend, especially I think the commentator said it in the game. I think that there was a goal that he dropped a kind of like a chest mark, like a jumping chest mark, and then it went to ground and he quickly like gobbled it off the floor and then handballed it to, I think, Mitch Hannon.
Hannon
in the goal square. But how good is his second and third efforts? I thought he's just plays so hard. He's just awesome to watch. And I think watching him and Cody as well just attack every possession, I just really enjoy watching them play. I'm keen. It's awesome that they're both, 19 and 21. So they're going to be like very good for the years to come. What did you think of the Cody Waitman free kicks?
Obviously I was probably spewing a little bit at the time, but it comes with the territory of playing AFL footy, I suppose. The one on the boundary line was a bit of a stinker.
I'd agree that one just wasn't there. But again, for all the Bombers fans potting Cody in his Instagrams, like, ease up, like it's the umpire that blows the whistle. Like, Cody, at the end of the day, he still got bumped. He didn't exactly dive. And I thought the Draper one was a bit stiff as well. But that stuff always tends to happen when you've got a ruckman next to a small forward. They're just bound to just kind of knock him high. And I don't think it was a particularly like aggressive hit, or like it was clearly accidental as well. But those things just get called every game. It was just, I guess, what made it a bigger issue was that they directly resulted in goals. So I guess that was the major carry on.
Yeah, I mean, from an Essendon supporter perspective, I think the toughest thing was probably the fact that both teams are really struggling to score.
Yeah.
And from open play, and I think the fact that when you guys were probably up, I think like 2 points in that third quarter, and then two of the next three goals, I think, from memory, were two of those free kicks. So,
yeah.
Obviously, like the Dogs, for me, they asserted themselves in the second half. They coped far, far better with the conditions, and I don't think it would have mattered in the end. But it's, you know, that internal battle that you have as a supporter. It's really hard not to sort of like think about what happens if like the free kicks don't come about when you're 2 points up.
And you guys get a bit
of Dogs are the team that's under pressure in that scenario because they're the one that has the expectation of winning the game. Do they crumble, or are we able to get back into the game? Are we able to stay in it longer rather than, because really, like, it was that wet and we were struggling to score that much that once he got like three goals up, I really felt like that was game over.
Yeah. I understand. But just quickly, I also want to mention, I thought Stringer, we put Easton Wood on him, and I thought Easton Wood did a great job. Obviously, Stringer had a couple of goals, but I think in regards to his impact in like just kind of getting Essendon into their forward line and just kind of like slowing down his midfield presence as well, I thought Easton Wood, that was a really good move by Bevo as well. I think although Stringer like showed glimpses, I don't think he had like that complete performance that like we've seen throughout this year in a lot of games.
Yeah, the other thing I thought was Stringer, which was a little bit strange, is he's actually been playing essentially 50-50 time in terms of midfield and forward. And I really thought that that's what they probably should have gone with. It felt like he was doing like 80-20.
Yeah.
And admittedly, a large portion of his midfield time does come from center bounces. And when you naturally, when you have less goals, there's less center bounces. So he's not going to be in the midfield as much. But I thought at halftime, maybe even halfway through the third quarter, when it was clear that we just needed a change up, I thought Rutten missed a trick there where he potentially could have rolled with a period of time there where he put Stringer up on the ball and, you know, maybe he could just make something happen because he's got that in his arsenal. So, you know, that's probably one thing I would have changed in terms of potentially getting Jake into the game. But I, as you said, I actually thought also that Easton Wood did a fantastic job.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you say about the midfield forward share, because maybe Rutten felt that you guys just were struggling to score early, so maybe that you kind of needed to rely on keeping him down there just to create more opportunities. But I also think that putting him in the midfield creates opportunities because it gets them, so it's kind of like you can't really win. There's an unfortunate one Jake Stringer.
Yeah, it's the battle you have. It's like, do you trust your midfield to get it down there and then he's going to help be a source for a goal, or are you going to use him around the ball but potentially sacrifice what you've got down forward, which means it might just come straight back out? So he was probably battling with that all game, but I thought, given that it was a territory game based on it being wet, I thought
midfield,
if you can at least get your ball into the forward line, maybe you can earn a free kick, maybe you can just jag one from a stoppage, like...
Yeah.
I probably would have just moved him up the ball once he was having less effect on the game in that first half.
Yeah, I agree with you. Just quickly, what did you think of the Bulldogs ruck situation? I actually have some pretty positive words for Lewis Young and Tim English. I thought they did pretty well. I've just got some stats here. So comparing this to the Port Adelaide game where Lewis Young featured in 57 of 85 ruck contests in round 23 against Port, and Tim English had 5 on the night. And then on the weekend against the Bombers, Young had 53 of 104 and then English had 46. So up from 41 from the week before. My quick thoughts is, first of all, Sam Draper, absolute gun. I'm jealous that he's not on my team. Really love watching him play. Loved looking at his wet mullet in the rain as well.
Yeah, it looks fantastic, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was outrageous. But I thought, and you know how hard I was on the ruck situation for the Bulldogs last week. I think.
Yeah, and you were absolutely spewing when you saw the teams.
Yeah, I was not a happy boy. But I thought having the tandem of Lewis and first of all, I think Lewis played much more aggressive in ruck. I feel like in the like last couple of weeks before the Bombers game, he played kind of defensively and just kind of let the opposition ruck jump all over him. Whereas here, I feel like he actually won some taps because I think splitting it with Tim English meant that one, it wore down Sam Draper. So it meant in the second half, Sam Draper's coming up against people that have against Young and English who have faced half the ruck contest that he has. So generally they're just getting more lift in their jumps. And it's just generally just more tiring to go against two than one. So I was really impressed with that. I thought it worked pretty well. And I think Lewis Young keeps his spot this week. I think basically just off what Bebo said as well in the media, Steph Martin just seems done for the year, unless an emergency. But yeah, I was pretty impressed with it. What did you think?
Yeah, well, I still think Sam Draper was fantastic for Essendon, and I think they've got one to really enjoy there. He's kind of this weird combination between, like, he's got that nastiness of like Shane Mumford in him, but he's kind of got a little bit of finesse in his ruck work, like Nick Nat does. He's got one of the worst kicks in the AFL yet, but as long as he knows what a ruckman should, and that's just a handball to the guy running past, then he'll be fine. And he's real old school. He kicks the ball off the ground lots. But to get to the Dogs though, I really noticed Tim English around the ground early in the first half, and
It took a
that's
half
really what
in the
he's.
wet.
Yeah, that's really what he's got to try and do, because he's obviously an undersized ruckman, and he can get manhandled by some of these bigger ruckmen that he plays on, but that means he's got a distinct advantage at covering the ground, and you should be running them off their feet and really getting involved in link up play. And I thought he did that early. And then, as you said, I actually thought that Lewis Young in the second half was really getting proactive with Draper, and he was getting into him, making that first contact as the ball was being thrown up. There was times where I was just kind of like Draper, you've got like 30 kegs on this bloke, just throw him out the way and like get a nice clean tap out. But I thought Lewis Young was trying to get proactive and prevent that, and he was really getting into the body of Draper. And I mean, they're obviously both not the best ruckman in the league, so, and you've got like this jet midfield around it, so if you can break even, if you can just make it hard on the other
Yeah, that's what I'm
person.
about to say. Like, I'm not saying like we dominated Sam Draper, but the Bulldogs don't need to dominate in the ruck to win. It's literally just breaking even or getting somewhat close. Just so we're just not our midfielders aren't playing defensive after every tip. But yeah, I was really loved Lewis Young as well. So there was a couple of little like scuffles that broke out, and Lewis Young was on the bottom of it, like in one of them. And who was punching him in the head? Was it Merritt?
No, he so Merritt, I think he did like one of the classic, like you tackle someone to the ground. I think it was Lachie Hunter potentially. And then like as you get up, like you like rub
Give me
their
give me
you
poison.
rub them in the grass or whatever. Then like he was running off, and then Lewis Young like ran after him and decked him from behind, and
First
then
of all,
like
I actually
straight.
remember this. It was a bit of a flop.
And then it come from behind. You know what they say about coming from behind. So, yeah. Well, you can't king hit, so you're not going to hit someone from behind, are you? So,
Yeah, no,
and
well,
then
that.
yes, it was Stringer and Devin Smith that came over and remonstrated, and I'm pretty sure it was Jake Stringer. They gave him a couple cheap shots underneath on the ground there.
Yeah, which we love. But yeah, I thought, yeah, it was just exciting to see Lewis Young actually fired up because I feel like sometimes the player's a bit scared and just seems a bit soft. So I was just like, wait, is that Lewis Young punching on? I was like, yes. So yeah, I thought that was impressive. But yeah, so I was overall obviously very happy with the second half. But yeah, should we move on to this week's games?
Yep, I'm happy to move on.
All right, Friday night, Cats Giants, and it's in Perth, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So obviously there'll be no Toby Green, no Tom Green. And there's another one, isn't there? Who's it? Who else?
Isaac Cumming looks unlikely as well.
Ankle, wasn't it? But yeah, so obviously the Giants are a bit depleted, but I do also think they're also coming off a win, which is always a bit of a dangerous thing in regards to momentum. And obviously the Cats are coming off a loss, but they're also pretty used to losing the first week and having to win the second week. But what do the Cats need to change? How do they get on top of this game? How do they actually, how they would actually successfully like implement their game plan?
I mean, I think they just got to do what they do. That for me, it looks like they've got a distinct advantage on paper here. They're the number one contested side in the competition. So they can go head to head with GWS because that's their strength too, contested ball. And look, Cummings out, he's a bit of hide out of their back line. Sam Taylor's obviously fantastic and gave Tom Hawkins a lukewarm bath like last time they played. But I think you get Rome back down forward line, down the forward line. You try and get that three-pronged attack going again. And obviously you don't have Toby to worry about down the other end. And I think they can handle Hogan. So I think this is just a bounce back game for the Cats, but it's obviously a danger game regardless because GWS just playing with house money. People halfway through the season and before the season thought they weren't even going to play finals. Now they do. Then they win one.
They were 0-3.
Yeah, exactly. So like, weren't even expected to be there, and now they've won one. So like, it when you've got the Cats facing straight sets. So I think this is, I'm not going to say formality because nothing is in footy, but this, I would say Cats are strong favourites for mine.
Yep. Well, what score would you say? Like what difference would you give?
Giants still did them a few weeks ago, so I'll go 5 goals, but like, they have it in hand the whole time. Like finals, I find like, unless you sort of see what happened in like the Dogs Essendon game where it's like the game is over and then you pile on a couple of late goals.
Might have a blowout too.
But I feel like finals are just like always a bit closer. Yeah. Even though they look like they could be one-sided, they still in margin stay a bit closer.
Yeah. Well, I think the Cats will swim in this game as well. I just think they've got too many great players that played awfully last weekend that just won't do that 2 weeks in a row. Even like players like Henderson, so like Henderson had a shocker.
Awful, wasn't it?
A shocker. And I'm not saying he's one of the best in the comp, but he's definitely better than that.
He's been very, very good this year.
Yeah. So I just think there's just too many players, and same as like Danger, Joel Selwood. I'm still a bit out on Gary Rowan. I still just haven't seen him play well in a finals game. But I just think, yeah, like Hawkins, Cameron, they just have to fire up. They like, I just think they will. Yeah, I reckon they'll win by at least 5 goals as well. I'm interested to see if there's any beef between Jeremy Cameron playing his old team. But I think with Toby out of the team, they lose that extra grunt as well. So it might be less fiery. But yeah, I see Cats running away with this game, unfortunately, especially with Toby Green out.
I mean, as you would know as a Dog supporter, the Giants have got it in their bag of tricks to come out and go after a team.
Yeah.
So
in a big way,
you know, when potentially you feel like you're a massive underdog and you maybe want to get in the head of the other side, do we see them come out and go straight to Jeremy Cameron before the bounce and get after him and get in his head? And I actually don't think that'd be too bad a ploy because I expect them to go with two taggers.
Yep.
That's what they've been rolling with in this back half of the
DeBoer
year.
And Ash?
Yeah, DeBoer and Ash. And
where do they go?
I'd probably go to Mitch Duncan. I think he's the most damaging ball user. Maybe not the most damaging ball user in the AFL, but in my opinion, he's the best kick in the AFL, especially going inside 50. Yep. He's the one that just laces out Hawkins every time. So I'm probably sending Ash to him because he's the a bit more of the outside tagger.
Yep.
And then I'm just sending De Boer to probably the best person in the midfield at the time, whether it's Danger or Guthrie.
Yeah.
And then you just with Hopper and Taranto or whoever else is in there, that you just go head to head with them with the versus Geelong's two other midfielders.
Yeah. Well, you're saying that, yeah. GWS is still, they've got a lot of finals experience, so that's definitely in their favour. Geez, Benny, you've got me thinking. I feel like it could be a closer game now. Just talking about, the Giants do have a lot of, star power.
They should be able to expose Geelong once again for speed, and Optus is nothing like GMHBA, so... on paper is one thing, but that means absolutely nothing in footy. So they beat him a few weeks ago, and I know Toby, everyone feels like he's a massive out. He obviously is, but it won't always go to script.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so I think Cats win. I'm going to change it to between 3 and 4 goals. But yeah, I've got the Cats controlling most of the game.
Yep.
All right. So Lions, Dogs, Saturday night. Obviously, the Dogs tried to make it a 4:45 game, just based on them having to stay in quarantine. So they obviously want the earlier game, but apparently it's come out that they won't have to do that. So they've pushed it back to the nighttime slot. Where do you reckon the Dogs focus on, or where do the Dogs have a key advantage, and where do you think the Lions have an advantage? You can have a second.
I don't think the Lions, they're not as damaging as I feel like they could be out of the midfield. McCluggage has obviously come on this year, and Zorko is really good when he gets forward, but like Lachie Neal last week had 46 touches and I wouldn't have known it. And so I think there's a real opportunity to get an advantage in there. Obviously, I mean, it seems obvious to say that the Dogs can get an advantage in the midfield, but I think Melbourne cut them up out of the midfield last week. I think the Dogs can do that too in there. In terms of the Lions, I think they would be in their best interest potentially to get Joe up the ground and get him operating outside the 50 and clearing it out for Charlie.
Yeah.
Almost in that old style, like Pagan's Paddock sort of strategy where it's like, you're just like, I've got Charlie, you can have who you want. And we're just going to back him in one-on-one. And then he's going to... Yeah, and he's going to at least halve the contest. And because they're without Mick Stay and Hipwood, you just got to try and get... Because Joe's up the ground. He's obviously got a raking boot, so he can get it in quickly to Charlie. If he does, in fact, get it, he can get it over the back of players and stuff like that. And if he's playing up the ground as well, he can try and be that target down the line, which they really lacked last week.
Yeah, it's pretty hard for the Lions because obviously... They would love to be able to bring Joe up and play that sort of Jeremy Cameron type role. But at the same time, they are really lacking that other key forward down to kick it to. Because, obviously you can bring Danaher up to play more up the ground, but it just means obviously if Charlie can go nuts, then go for it. But it's also, Charlie has struggled against the Dogs in previous times. The last two times, we've had Easton Wood on him. Charlie Cameron actually hasn't scored a goal.
So, interesting.
Yeah, so...
Because I would have thought, naturally, just, off the top of my head, I would have thought that he probably doesn't have the speed to go with Charlie.
Yeah, well, he actually did. He was a really good 400 runner in high school. But, yeah, he's...
That.
He's a serious athlete. But yeah, so my tip would be to put Easton Wood on Charlie Cameron, just to start it off. And hopefully we can have a look, because more than likely he'll score a couple. But if you can limit him to not score five, that would be nice.
I think if you keep Charlie Cameron to two goals, the Dogs win this game.
Interesting. Yeah, I actually don't mind that tip. You should open the market for it. What do you think about the ruck situation with the Big O? Do you, personally, I think, as I said earlier, I reckon we keep Lewis Young and Tim English. I reckon that worked. And I think the Big O isn't – obviously, he's a big boy, but I don't think he's as damaging that will tear up those two. Talking about what we did before and just kind of like the Dogs needing to break even. But I reckon we run the same thing. And I'm actually off the Steph Martin train.
Yeah, I mean, we touched on the Dogs ruck stuff earlier, so we don't need to dwell on it too much. But I think I'm in the same party as you. I think long as there's a real effort to go with Oscar McInerney when he pushes forward, because he could potentially, like, when he's playing in the ruck, he likes to drift forward and grab a get a mark and get forward for a goal. So long as there's a conscious effort to get back when he does do that, he's not like your Max Gorn that's going to rip you apart in the middle. So I think the Dogs can stick fat with what they ran with last week.
Yep. Sweet. And who do you think, what's the tip of the game?
I actually hadn't come to a conclusion on this game which way I'm going to go. The last time these two teams played was way back at the start of the year. I think they played each other in Ballarat.
Yeah, I got that.
But it wasn't a massive margin, but it just felt comfortable for the Dogs the whole time. Now, obviously, this was when the Dogs were flying and you had Josh Bruce, but and I saw stuff last week that I didn't really like from the Lions. And although they were one of the form teams coming into finals and they'll be back at the Gabba, I think I'm going to go with the Dogs by 4 points.
That a boy. You really are very smart.
Crowd goes wild.
Yeah. Look, obviously I'm tipping the Dogs. I think, as we were talking about earlier, I just don't think the midfield for Brisbane at the moment just seems like they're firing that much. Zorko was pretty quiet on the weekend. I would be interested to see if we could, because obviously it's Neil or Zorko who I feel like are the two most damaging when they're flying. So it wouldn't surprise me if we, based on how well the Dunkley on Parrish worked on the weekend, it wouldn't surprise me if Bevo tries to roll that again. So with that in mind, I feel like quite comfortable to just kind of gauge how the game's tracking and then make that adjustment. And obviously Dunkley just played it pretty well. And I think Dunkley is extremely large. And I think having him as a tagger, one, he's very fit and he's got a bit of game fitness to him now. I think he's a good tag that, to throw on Zorko, because I think Dunkley has the tank for it. I think the Dogs win by 19 points.
Yeah, and the other thing with Dunkley is, like, that I think Bevo called on him to tag Parrish for is he's still out of form.
Yeah.
And, you know, you still need to be able to use him without him being out there and him being a liability. So, obviously, he's not a liability. Like, that's a long, long way to go, but he is out of form. And I think if he just follows some around, he's doing a job, he's reducing someone's impact on the game, and then he's working off him to still get his few clearances and link, and he's still working in link up play. I think that's a really smart move from Bebo. And the other thing I'll just point out is, I mentioned before that the Lions really lacked forward pressure and locking the ball in their forward 50 last week. And so I think if that happens again, Bailey Dale and Caleb Daniel could really just dictate this game from the halfback flanks. I think that if the Lions aren't keeping them under pressure and they just allow them to run right off that halfback flank, I think it won't really matter if the ball goes in there, because it was just coming out far too quickly out of their forward line last week.
Yep, agreed. So yeah, I'm very keen for that game. I'll be pacing around my house, no doubt. Just finally, we've got a few questions. There's only a few of them, but this one's from Janeth. Should the AFL remove the 666 ruling? This would allow a defense-oriented team to build around their strengths rather than be forced into playing an attacking brand of footy.
First of all, I know that Janeth is a Geelong supporter, so there's absolutely no surprise that he's asking that question. anything to play to their strengths, but no, I like the 666 rule. I think that it's had clear success from the point of view that both teams just feel extremely vulnerable when the ball goes back to the middle. And, you know, potentially I don't know how it works out statistically, whether it has increased scoring or not, but I just think it's a great look, the fact that we really get to see some of these talented players actually get an opportunity to go one-on-one, because it happens so rarely in football these days. So yeah, the fact that you can see like Tom Hawkins one-on-one beasting someone at full forward, or you can see Charlie Cameron go one-on-one and like run right, I think that's a great look for the game. So I would definitely keep 666.
Yep, I'm the exact same. I just think it opens up the game, and creating those one-on-one contests is where like a lot of excitement comes from in the footy. So yeah, I would agree with you to keep it in. And just lastly, this question from Bean, do the Dogs make any changes to the team? I'll take this one. I kind of already said it in my, like earlier in the other comments about the Bulldogs, but I think we keep the same team. I think we still, believe it or not, keep Shaqy in the team, which you just wouldn't have found me saying that for the last few years. So yeah, I've been impressed with him, and I think, yeah, Steph Martin stays out, keep the same ruck situation. All right, well, thank you very much, Benny.
Yeah, I think...
Oh, I think we're lagging a bit.
I was just going to say that...
Oh, there you go. Yeah, we're back.
I was just going to say that I think that the team struggled for form in the part of the year in those last few rounds. So why upset something that's not broke? So yeah, I would agree. I'd just keep the same team and go with that for this weekend.
Yeah, agreed. All right, well, thanks for coming on again, Benny. Very keen for the footy. And go Dogs.
Good luck, man.